Welcome to My IELTS Classroom, the podcast where two ex-examiners talk all things IELTS. I'm Shelley Cornick.
And I'm Nick Long.
And today we're talking about how to teach IELTS. Are you ready to teach IELTS? How do you plan a class? And what should you teach in the class? Hello, Nick. How are you?
Hello. I'm all right. It's nice and sunny again here now. 30 degrees today. But it doesn't feel quite as like as bad as it was a couple of weeks ago.
I think we had a break.
Mm-hmm.
I personally had a break and was very grateful. When it started to rain, I nearly cried. But then after a couple of days when it was back down to 20, I actually thought, oh, I quite miss the warm weather.
Oh, I didn't think that at all. I was glad to be rid of it, yeah. I could breathe again in my own apartment.
Oh, mate, I'm so deep in the Olympics. I don't even know. I think my body is now on Tokyo time.
Mm.
I've got no idea if it's morning or evening. All I do is like sort through my rubbish so that I'm ready to go back to England and just watch. Fencing was the thing that I was into yesterday. And archery. Yes, very archery nice. Was amazing.
Yeah, archery's cool.
So the big thing for me, you know, the reason we've decided today to do this, how to teach IELTS, is because about a week ago, if you'd gone into my office, I have like a wall, you know, like a shelving unit. And on that shelving unit, I had 15 large A3, you know, those like ring binder folders.
Yep.
Full of teaching materials, which I have like built up over the last 12 years. Today, I've managed, so over the last week, I've managed to like cut those down to three.
Wow.
Like the amount of, I mean, I have got no idea how I'm going to carry all of the paper down to recycling. It must be at least 25, 30 kilograms.
Wow.
But mate, it was so weird because it was like, you know, some of those lessons I planned probably 10 years ago.
And you've still got them all.
And I've still got them. So my first piece of advice, you know, today is an unusual episode, I guess, because we're talking more to teachers than students. But my first advice to any teachers out there would be, the first time you teach a lesson, make sure you really write out your teaching plan.
Yep.
Like really clearly, really neatly, because you'll be like me, you'll still be using them 20 years later. Do you do that?
I remember when I first started teaching, I made a lot of plans. And then as the years have gone by, I don't really need them anymore. Because I either remember the plan off by heart, or if something changes, like if a new book comes out and it's a good book, then I just sort of shift the plan to include what's in them.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it's funny because I would take the first plan out and then underneath it, there'd be like three or four previous plans.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Like the reason I managed to cut down so much, I mean, obviously I'm a hoarder. Anytime I'd photocopy something for a lesson, didn't use it, I'd put it back so I wouldn't have to copy it next time. But definitely, you know, some of the plans I've got for the general English courses from 10 years ago, you know, I don't know, it would be teaching the past perfect, for example, or conditionals. It seems so funny that I'd spent the time, you know, writing them all down, the examples I'd use on the board. Because as you said now, all of that is just
it's in your head, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm sure like, I could press like, you know, Nick, play present perfect. And you could just give me your whole present perfect board presentation, right? So I thought what we would do, as I have been down memory lane, the other thing that's funny is that some of the lessons I only taught once, but I would never have remembered. But when you actually see the lesson plan, I was just back in all of these different classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
It's so nice.
Nostalgia is a powerful drug, isn't it?
I was very nostalgic, Nick, about my previous classes. So what I thought we'd do today then is we would have a look at what I would just say is the basics of being an IELTS teacher. Obviously, you know, we can't provide you today with lesson plans and, you know, particular lesson plans or courses. But what we can do, I guess, is sort of take you step by step through what I think and what Nick thinks it means to be an IELTS teacher, right?
Yep.
So I would say then, step one, if you're listening to this podcast because you are about to teach IELTS or you're already teaching IELTS, I think my first question would be, are you actually ready to become an IELTS teacher or should you be teaching IELTS? I guess. Mm-hmm. So I think we've spoken about this before, Nick, when we were talking about how to choose a good teacher.
Yep.
But I think the first thing I'd say for me is if you are just an IELTS teacher, so if you consider yourself a person who only teaches IELTS, maybe because you passed IELTS with a 7 or a 7.5, mm-hmm. in my honest opinion, I don't actually think you are really a teacher.
No.
Because for me, there's not really any such thing as just teaching IELTS.
No.
Teachers are teachers, you know. I may not like it, but if somebody said to me tomorrow, Shelley, could you teach TOEFL or could you teach a proficiency course? Mm-hmm. The answer is, of course I can. Yeah. Yes, I'd have to start from beginning and I'd have to start preparing. But the point is that I have got the skills because I am first and foremost a teacher. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what you want to say about this, Nick. I mean, I guess for me, it's the difference between being a, you know, well, what do you think is the difference between being a teacher and being an IELTS teacher?
Well, I think a teacher is somebody who can explain every aspect of the language, not just stuff mm-hmm. that's related to IELTS.
Exactly.
So if, you know, if you're just an IELTS teacher, if you know how IELTS works,
yeah.
but then a student has a question about third conditionals yeah. or something, you know, some kind of complex grammar construction, are you in a position to answer it? If you're just an IELTS teacher, mm-hmm. then maybe not, yeah.
Right. And I'd also say, I think the sad thing is that you may not actually realize the knowledge that you don't have, mm-hmm. right? So I would say, you know, a lot of students come and they say, you know, I've got this problem. Mm-hmm. And then once I start working with them, I realize, well, I don't actually think that is your problem, right? Like, you may say that you have a problem paraphrasing and with Lexis, but mm-hmm. your Lexis is actually fine. What you have a problem with is organization or topic development mm-hmm. or many other things.
Yep.
So, you know, we are not the gatekeepers of teaching. Anyone is, you know, able to go out there and say that they're an IELTS teacher. All I would say is, you know, on Friday on a Facebook group, there was a girl who said she'd been getting a lot of messages asking for help and she was going to start a YouTube channel to pass on her knowledge. Mm-hmm. I say knowledge loosely. And when I looked at her recent essays that she'd been posting in that group, mm-hmm. she was nowhere near a 7. She had absolutely, you know, terrible use of Lexis. Some of those was using all of those cohesion devices, transition signals, which don't really exist, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, usually I don't say anything, but I just said, the thing is, I can't stop you starting a YouTube channel, but you need to think that IELTS is an exam which changes people's lives.
Mm.
And it's extremely expensive. So yeah. you have to feel comfortable in yourself mm-hmm. guiding people in a life-changing exam. And I would say, unless you have been trained as a teacher, because teacher's not just tutoring or lecturing, right?
Nope.
It's setting up a classroom so that students can learn in a communicative way, so that they can discover things, so that there's a progression in their learning.
Yeah.
If you don't have those skills, then I don't think you should really be out there guiding people, because I don't think you actually are ready to do that.
No, and it's not something that you can just do overnight and learn overnight. You can have all the knowledge in the world about teaching,
mm-hmm.
but if you don't have any experience,
yeah.
then you're not going to be a good teacher. It takes time to build up skills. And I did my CELTA kind of out of desperation, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, because I'd done a bachelor's and a master's degree, which hadn't been very fruitful in helping me find a job.
Uh-huh.
And I decided that I wanted to move to Russia, and becoming an English teacher was basically the easy ticket
mm-hmm.
to get to Russia. So I did a CELTA in Poland, and
that's right.
It was great. And I really, because I was just using CELTA as a means to an end, but mm-hmm. it was a real revolution in my life, and it completely changed my thinking about English, first of all,
mm-hmm.
and about, you know, just how difficult teaching is, because this was a month-long intensive course. And I don't think, even in 4 or 5 years of university, I never worked as hard as I did in that CELTA course. you know, you teach, you're in the center 8 hours a day teaching and learning, mm-hmm. and then you're doing 3 or 4 hours of planning and homework in the evening for a solid month. And I got a pass B, which is not a pass.
That's
A,
amazing. But no. That's amazing good. If you don't have any previous teaching experience.
Yeah. But then, you know, when I actually got to Russia and started teaching, it took me, I would say, at least 2 years to find my feet and actually, you know, get some confidence that I knew a little bit, I knew what I was talking about.
Definitely. So, you know, if you are somebody out there who is thinking, you know, I actually want to teach IELTS and I think I'm good at this, mm-hmm. go and get some sort of qualification like a CELTA, mm-hmm. So that you've actually got the teaching experience and the knowledge and the genuine know-how mm-hmm. to be able to really help people. But I think it's interesting what you just said, Nick, because I would say even after getting a CELTA, you know, if you're a native speaker, mm. I don't think getting your CELTA and then the next day jumping into IELTS would be the right move.
Definitely not. And I actually did a couple in those first 2 or 3 years. I did a couple of covering classes for teachers in IELTS, mm-hmm. and it was a nightmare because I didn't know what I was doing, to be honest.
Yeah. You just feel out of your depth, I think.
Completely out
problem.
Of my depth, yeah. And the worst thing was the students knew that.
I think students can tell when somebody knows what they're doing and they don't know what they're doing. You know, for the first couple of years, I think really, as a teacher, you're just building up your classroom management skills, mm-hmm. your basic knowledge of, like, you know, how to create a lesson plan that flows and all that type of thing. So, you know, IELTS for me, I would say actually as a language teacher, is probably, you know, apart from teaching very specific law exams or, you know, profession exams, is pretty much the highest level you can get, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, you know, don't do it until you feel ready to do it, essentially, because you're not, number one, obviously it's not great for the students, but as Nick just said, it doesn't feel very nice for you either, right? It's a panic feeling. It feels like you're drowning, I think.
Especially when they ask you questions that you just can't answer.
Right. Yeah.
It's not a
and
nice
the answer
feeling.
To that is always, that's a great question. We'll talk about that next week. But you can only say that once or twice in a class, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you are somebody who's got a bit of teaching experience and thinks, you know what, I'm ready to start teaching IELTS, welcome. I actually think that teaching IELTS is fantastic. I think it's very fruitful. It's very rewarding as a teacher. I think all we're trying to say is just make sure you are really ready for yourself as much as the students. In terms of, you know, finding out about the exam, obviously the best way to do that, I think, is to actually do the exam yourself.
Yes.
So if you're a second language learner, you know, fantastic. Go arm yourself with the skills to do the test, and then that score is going to enable you, you know, to show your students that you're ready because you have a good understanding. Mm-hmm. If you're a native speaker, you could do that, to be honest. But I would say, you know, a simple way is just make sure every time you teach a lesson, you actually do the activities you're setting the students yourself. Because I see a lot of teachers who just, you know, oh, I'll do this reading and here are the answers in the teacher's book. Mm-hmm. You know, and they just say, no, wrong, it's C. But if it's multiple choice, wrong, it's C, or, you know, it's A. But I think unless you actually do the activities yourself
and understand why it's C.
Right. Understand why it's C. Understand why a lot of the students chose the wrong answer. Mm-hmm. Oh, I get it. You got tricked by this sentence. Mm-hmm. Once you start doing them yourself, I think you'll learn yourself how you approach the tasks, mm-hmm. you know, particularly for reading and listening. Well, what are you doing as you read to find the heading? What are you doing to answer the true, false, not given? Take that. That's the way I've always taught every exam. I do the exams myself and then I think, okay, what did I need to do? Mm-hmm. in order to succeed, and how can I work backwards to show the students how to do the same thing?
Yeah.
I really think that's important. I know so many teachers who, you know, teach, particularly teachers, I always think, who teach reading by just scanning. And I just think, you haven't actually done any of the reading tests, have you? Because if you had, particularly for those academic questions, you would realise there's absolutely no way on God's earth
you can scan and answer all the questions correctly.
Yeah.
No chance.
So Definitely. Before you step into the classroom, ask yourself, am I qualified enough? Do I actually know enough about the test? If you don't, you can go, you can, these are holes that you can fill, right? Yep. It doesn't mean stop. It just means pause and get yourself ready. I feel I'm a bit preachy saying all these things, Nick, but you know, I do think with IELTS, there are so many people out there who are not really qualified or ready to teach IELTS. And I just think if you're serious about it and it's something you really want to do, take the time to arm yourself first.
Well, I mean, where I started teaching in 2014 and I became an IELTS examiner for speaking in 2018. And even when I was an examiner, I wasn't teaching IELTS. And it was only after a little while when you approached me to help.
Right.
With marking essays. But we sat down and went through everything in detail. You remember, I came to visit you at your house, at your flat, and we sat down. Right. We had a nice spaghetti bolognese.
I forgot that. Well done, mate. I fed him.
But we sat through it, didn't we, for 3-4 hours at a time.
Yeah, we
did. And you went through all the band descriptors with me.
Yeah.
And I would say even after that, it took me 6 months to a year in writing to feel like, okay, I can do this completely by myself now, marking essays.
Yeah. And I would say the great thing about Nick, and the reason I knew he was going to be a great teacher and I trusted him so much, is Nick, you were fantastic at asking questions. You know, you would always say to me, wait a second, what do you think this should be? Because, you know, I'm thinking this, but I'm also thinking this. Is it 6 or is it 7? And then we discuss it. But that's how you learn, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's knowing from the beginning you don't know everything. Essentially.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I change my mind about stuff all the time. I'm continually adding lessons to the live lessons where I'm like, oh,
this could
be something
better.
New I've learned. This could be better. Like, let's improve it. Something I haven't written down in the notes for today's lesson, but, you know, if you know somebody who is already a successful IELTS teacher, go and talk to them. Maybe they could, you know, you could go into their classroom. You could maybe observe them for a couple of lessons, get an idea about what's going on. I think classroom or peer observation is a great way of learning.
Definitely.
Yeah. So once then you have decided, I feel like I'm ready to do this. I know about the exam now. I'm qualified as a teacher. I guess then, you know, if you are given your first IELTS class, and I'm going to take today on the understanding that you're not just teaching one-to-one, but you're actually teaching like whole classes, however many students that is. I don't know. 8, I think, would be the ideal number for an IELTS group, I think.
I think more than that can complicate things.
Yeah. I mean, I would say 8 would be a good number if you're starting.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, if you're working for a language school and they ask, you know, can you teach IELTS? Well, I guess the first thing you've got to think about when you start planning is, okay, how much time do I have to prepare these students, right?
Yes.
How many weeks is the course? If you've got 10 lessons, if you've got 20 lessons, because that is really going to determine how deep you can go, I guess, into the preparation. When we worked for New Planet, I think our IELTS courses were 11 weeks.
Two classes a week.
Yeah, 2 3-hour classes a week. So
Four academic hours, yeah.
It was, because I was going to say it was 44 hours, but the maths was wrong. So it was 44 academic hours. Now, I think, actually, that may sound like a long time. I actually think that I was pushing.
Yeah, 44 hours is actually not a lot of time, is it, to prepare?
Not really, no. So, but I know now that there are some schools that run intensive courses, which are just 10 hours,
it's
right?
Crazy.
So, you know, it's crazy. Doesn't mean that you can't teach stuff that's valuable, but you've got to think carefully about, okay, what can I actually deliver, you know, to the students in that time? So first of all, think about the time that you've got. Nick, what would be the second thing you want to think about?
I think it's really important to think about the level of the students. Like, what scores do they need? What level are they at now? And how much can you realistically do in the time that you've been given?
Yeah, 100%. And the thing is that in our podcast, we talk a lot about, you know, getting a 7+. We even did an episode recently about how to get an 8+. But the truth is that for 90% of IELTS students, they're undergraduates, right? Who are just, they need an academic IELTS certificate so that they can go and study at university.
Yeah.
And for those students, they need a 5.5 or a 6.
Yeah.
So the depth of knowledge those students need is completely different to the students who need a 7 or 8. So I really think you want to sit down and think carefully about, you know, who am I teaching? How long have I got? The other thing I haven't written down, actually, I always think of Nick as being a very, very good teacher of teenagers. Yeah? Well, I don't know. I think you're good with teens is, I guess, as well, maybe the age of the students, right?
Yeah.
Because I guess if you've got like a group of adults, you may be able to power through more sort of less interesting, bland material.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Because they're just there. They need the score. Whereas teens, you might need to think about, you know, presenting stuff in a more fun, interactive, communicative way.
It's very different to teach. Even some, like, even 18-year-olds are very, very, very different from 15 and 16-year-olds.
Right. And also, particularly for IELTS, you know, one of the things we've discussed, particularly for the academic exam, is that some of the topics are quite abstract and adult. They require people to know about social trends in other countries. If you're working in a country, I don't know, like China in particular, I'm thinking we work with a lot of Chinese students who say they struggle with ideas.
Yeah.
You may have to dedicate some time exposing your students to the type of topics. Or more time than if you're teaching in a mixed school or with adults who sort of have more world knowledge at their fingertips. So you definitely sit down and really think carefully about how long you've got, the level of the class. And then I would think the next thing you want to do is you want to think, okay, what style or how are you going to actually break down the lessons? Because I think there's two ways you can teach. One way you can teach is you can focus on a topic in each lesson and have like integrated lessons where you teach, you know, a bit of all of the skills at once. Or you could have lessons where you focus instead of on topics or on integrated skills on one skill. So you could maybe have, you know, one day where you teach reading, one day where you teach listening, one day where you teach writing. I guess there's benefits and drawbacks to both.
There are.
Let's start with the first one then. So, you know, if you decided what would, well, let's start off. What would a integrated lesson look like, Nick? If we were going to choose to teach by topic, what would that actually mean?
So if we, if we're going to teach by topic, that means that we would pick one of the commonly used topics in IELTS, like advertising, global warming, education, something like that. And we would focus on all four parts of the exam. So reading, listening, writing, speaking. We'd have a lot of stuff connected with vocabulary, so we're introducing words, phrases, expressions connected with these topics. And then as we go through each of the different IELTS sections, these words and phrases are going to come up. We look at the types of writing questions, the types of speaking questions they might have to answer, and because we're using the Lexis at the same time, it hopefully retains that Lexis in their knowledge bank and teaches them some skills at the same time.
And for me, that is how, you know, if you were to put me tomorrow back into a classroom like I used to teach, you know, 11 weeks, 8 students, that is exactly how I would choose to teach IELTS. So, you know, to give an example, exactly what Nick just said, if I think back to what I used to teach in the first lesson, we followed, we'll talk about books in a minute, but we used to follow objective IELTS and the advanced. And the first topic in that book was education, right? So just as Nick said, I think I had a really nice C1 level vocabulary sheet from Cutting Edge about education. You know, I think it was the A to Z of education that had really nice language like tertiary courses and vocational courses and all that sort of stuff. So we'd start with some vocabulary. Then I think we would, based on that vocabulary, do some nice simple speaking part one questions about schools. You know, you're talking about your primary school, high school. Did you study maths? Those type of part one questions. Remember, this was the first lesson, right? We're introducing students to the easier types of questions. Then we'd had a nice reading. It was quite about studying in the USA. I think that was from Ready for IELTS, which introduced headings match. So now we've moved from speaking part one to heading, so to the reading. And then after the break, we'd come back and we did a listening from objective intermediate about Morag from Scotland, who was homeschooled. So it was an introduction to multiple choice questions, right? Yeah. So again, part two, simple introduction to that part. And then from that, I took the topic of homeschooling and we did a brainstorm about, based on what she said about the positives and negatives, or, you know, and then we did, looked at how to organize and discuss both sides essay based on those ideas. Excellent. And then they would write that for homework. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, we could, I could go through hundreds of lessons like that. But the idea of these is you take the topic and you essentially, you're going to find reading activities, listening activities, as Nick said, you know, integrate the writing into it, so that, you know, when my students left at the end of that first lesson, they knew small pieces from each part of the test, right? But they, it had all been connected by that topic of education and they had some new words that they knew. I don't think I taught any grammar in that first lesson, but then the next lesson, yeah, we did contrast clauses when we looked at the essay again. So that's how you teach by skill. I think that's great because, as you said, you get all of that language, don't you?
Yeah.
That's built into it. So you're looking just as much as language as you are at the topic. Most IELTS textbooks are sort of built in this way, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, if you think about any of them, you know, if you're looking for recommendations, I would say, as I just said, objective IELTS, advanced and intermediate are good. Focus on IELTS is good. In fact, I think focus on IELTS might be the best. There are other ones. There's like step up to IELTS. There's instant IELTS. I would have a look and find the one base book that you would use as your main book throughout the course. IELTS Masterclass is another good one. However, I do not think there is one fantastic textbook that teaches everything you need to know.
You have to, you're going to have to take from different ones, aren't you?
Right, 100%. Now, the first time you teach the course, you might not do that, right? You might just want to say, okay, I'm going to teach from Focus on IELTS and I'm going to go through the book from the start to finish. That is fine, right? You know, the people that wrote that book, especially if you're using the teacher's book to get an idea of like extra activities, that is not a bad place to start. However, as you get a bit more experience, as you start doing the practice test yourself, as you start thinking, well, you know, in some of these books they've got a whole reading which has only got three questions, and that's a lot of time to spend for students just to practice, you know, a lot of reading just for students to practice three questions.
So
right?
You might want to change it to a different reading.
Yes, you might want to swap that out. You might think, you know what, there's not enough vocabulary here. The one thing I would say, though, is that in my experience, I don't think any book has got enough information about writing.
No, for sure.
Like, they usually do it as a folder, right? Writing folder one at the end of each chapter. And, you know, one of the problems with this approach is that it's going to depend on where you're teaching and the problem areas that students have. But certainly in Russia, our Russian students have got great academic skills, right?
Generally, so yes.
So there's a heavy emphasis in those books on reading and listening. Whereas most students who came in probably could have sat the exam and already got a 6.5 or a 7 for reading or listening. And where they needed more help was the speaking and the writing. So you may have to go to find, I don't know, like the Collins writing series book, or make, start making your own resources, right? That's when you get to be really good, right? So when you start thinking, well, I don't think that this is teaching it as clearly as it could be. That's essentially the thing I realized, Nick, that when I went through my teaching materials for IELTS, like I could see the birthing place of my IELTS classroom, essentially.
Just taking little bits from everywhere and making them better, basically.
100% I was like, oh, I've got that from there, that from there, that from there. And I could see how it all flowed together. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, that took me 10 or 12 years experience to work up to that next level. But don't, you know, if you just want to start with one book, that is great. But I think the more you supplement, the more you think about what do my students need, the better it's going to be. Can you think of any drawbacks to that approach, Nick? The teaching by topic approach?
I think the biggest drawback is that, that one does require a lot of time. In terms of the number of lessons you have, and more importantly, in terms of the time you have in each lesson. Because if you do have an hour or an hour and a half, you can't really go through a whole topic in that amount of time.
No, you can't. And yeah, you really can't. Mm-hmm. No. Also, I would say if you're going to take that approach, mm-hmm. you're going to have to plan all of your lessons
in advance. Well in advance. Mm-hmm.
Because essentially, you're going to have to make sure that in the 11 weeks, mm-hmm. throughout the topics, you cover every question type.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you might be like, okay, I've got this great reading for the topic of, I don't know, nature and nurture, but it's multiple choice and we've already done multiple choice and we haven't covered information match. So it's sometimes it's a jigsaw trying to find the materials that are good, that cover every type of question and fit neatly together.
Yes, definitely.
Difficult. It's a huge logic plan, right? Because you don't want to finish the course and think, oh my God, I didn't do speaking part three, or I mean, that would be pretty crazy, but, you know, or we didn't look at matching box listening questions or something. So if you are going to choose that approach, I think it's fantastic. And I think it can be great for the students because they don't get bored. They're into, you know, the lesson changes all the time. It's, you know, we're doing a bit of speaking, we're doing a bit of listening, but you've got to make you've got to plan it in ahead.
Yes, definitely.
The only other thing I would say that I noticed was that sometimes with that approach, I would say sometimes in a class to the students, okay, who remembers the reading that we did last week, for example? And they'll just be like a face, they'll just be like a wall of sort of confused faces, like, oh, do you remember the reading? I remember the reading. Well, you know, they'd leave the classroom and they'd just like, you know, particularly teenage boys, sorry if you're a teenage boy, but they'd just leave like piles of handouts. And I'd be like, these are your handouts, put them in order. I do think for some students, they may not always realise the relevance or importance of what you're teaching them, because it can feel like just a fun class about education. So if you're doing this, make sure you point out to students, you know, like, you, these are the multiple choice questions you will get in your exam, right? Really focus students' attentions at the crucial bits. Make sure they keep their handouts and notes. Try to draw the lines between the points for the students, because sometimes they're not able to do that themselves. All right. But I would say if you can, just as a teacher for your own enjoyment and for the students, I do think that integrated approach is the best one. The opposite then is, you know, maybe if you've got a short course, do you think it would be good to focus on skills?
Yeah, skills, like I said before, skills for short lessons, short courses, just getting the information out there, getting some practice in, focusing on something concrete for 45 minutes or an hour, definitely a good approach.
If you've only got a 45 minute lesson, you might not have time to like, la la la, here's some vocabulary. It's like, no, you're gonna have to mainline it. I also think teaching by skills can be good for students who've already taken the test and they know where they're lacking, essentially. So if you were just going to focus on skills, then this, you know, you can still use those books that we've just discussed, and you could take lessons, you know, you could just take a reading lesson and you could look at, you know, two or three different types of questions. I would say, though, if you're going to break it down on skills, particularly for reading and listening, I may just use the Cambridge books.
Yeah, just use the tests from there and then explain the skills yourself, so, basically.
You're right. So we're definitely not just, you know, pressing play for the listening or telling students, okay, read this, what's the answer? But I would use those texts as the starting point for the lesson and then break down, you know, still have the introduction, still get students to do interactive activities, but I might use those questions rather than questions from other books. Okay, cool. So that then leads us into what to teach. So let's imagine you've decided, okay, I've got 6 months to teach, you know, this course of upper intermediate students. We're going to do an integrated approach. Now you're actually going to sort of like go a bit deeper into, you know, what exactly you're going to include in the course. So, you know, as I just said before, you're going to have to plan ahead. At the very least, you want to make sure that by the end of the course, you have covered every single question type and every single part of the exam so that the students feel there's going to be no surprises for the student.
That's definitely not what they want.
In the test run. Ideally, you're not just going to cover everything once, right? As you go through, you're going to understand, okay, this is a class that's struggling with true, false, not given questions. So maybe you'll return to those later a couple of times. You know, although, as we said, you know, we use our lesson plans again and again and again. You know, I'm teaching a reading intensive course this afternoon. I think it's the fifth time that I've taught it. I've changed the course every single time, because it's going to depend on the level of the students, what they find difficult, what they find easy. So be flexible, right? Have your basic lesson plans there ready, but be prepared that, you know, students might find things easier or more difficult than you expected. And then you're going to revise. In terms of, you know, the order that you present the different types of questions, Nick, you've got any advice? Like, what would you recommend teachers think about when they're thinking about, you know, what should they teach first?
I think the best way, if we talk about listening and reading, the best way to order the information is to use the questions that appear most commonly first. To focus on the ones that consistently and regularly appear on speaking and on reading and listening exams.
Yeah, particularly for reading. So, you know, if you're teaching, if you've only got 3 or 4 weeks and you're teaching general training reading, well, you 100% are going to start with true, false, not given, multiple choice and completion. Because, you know, note completion or summary or sentence, because they are always going to appear. Oh, and matching that we looked at last week, right? But the part three questions for general training, like headings or multiple choice, are actually maybe not as important.
Yeah, they might not appear.
Students may not get headings. Or they're either going to get headings or multiple choice, right? So, I mean, I would put that further back in the course, definitely. In the other way, though, in academic, I would put headings and multiple choice near the front of the course because they're always going to get them. And they're difficult, all right? So I think, think about the frequency that questions appear. Same for writing, right? You know, if you're teaching academic task one, well, tables, line graphs, and bar charts and even pie charts appear a lot more frequently than maps and processes. So you've got to tell the students about maps and processes, but you might, if you've got a very short course, just do that in the last lesson after they've built the basic skills about compare charts and change charts and all that other stuff. So I think questions that also appear, what would be the other thing to think about?
Definitely to focus on some questions that require some specific types of skills or some specific training. So maybe something that's different from the other types of questions, but that really requires a specific skill, like headings match, for example.
You know, if you think about it, if you think about all of the general English books that we use, right, most of them contain multiple choice, don't they? I mean, every 15 or 16, like by the time you're 15 or 16, everybody in their life will have answered some type of multiple choice question. So although you should definitely spend some time on multiple choice, at least your students will have some basic understanding of how those questions work. Whereas, like you said, headings match, that may, students may never have even thought about that or may not even understand what are they actually being
it's
tested.
It's a very IELTS-specific skill, isn't it?
Same for information match, I think, as well. So I would say stick the common questions, stick the questions that require specific training at the beginning of the course. I always think it's good to work from hard, if that makes sense, to simple. In terms of the question types. But in terms of how you teach, you want to do the hardest questions first or the most complicated questions, but at the same time, you want to be teaching the most foundational skills and then building up to the more complex ones. So you've kind of got hard to easy. And easy to hard, if that makes sense. But actually, that is exactly, you know, I'm thinking particularly in terms of writing. Look at the way my course is structured. The first type of question we look at is discuss both sides because it's the most difficult. It's the most difficult because you've got to handle your opinion, other people's opinions. You've got complex transitions. You've got distancing. It's hard. But inside those lessons, I also teach the most foundational writing skills, ideas generation, how to organize paragraphs,
topic sentences.
How to write topic sentences, mm-hmm. how to write an introduction and conclusion, mm-hmm. yeah? So as a teacher, it's your responsibility to think, okay, you know, I just think it's like anything, any sort of training you do, you don't send people on the first, you know, if you go to the gym mm-hmm. and you tell someone tells you on the first day, run a marathon, you're never going back to the gym, are you, right? But if they said to you, no, go on, try 500 meters, okay, you're going to do it and then you're going to come back and next time you're going to be able to do more. Mm-hmm. So build skills from the foundation up. And then later, once the students know the basics, like how to get ideas, how to organize paragraphs, how to write topic sentences, then you can introduce the more complex things like building paragraphs that have got progression or hedging or referencing or good paraphrasing. They are the sort of minor skills that should come later. Because if you run out of time, the students still got a chance of passing if they know the foundations, I think.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Noor from Pakistan. I study with Maya IELTS classroom because of the immense support Shelly offers. She is one of the most committed teachers out there.
I study with my IELTS classroom because ma'am explains everything so well and ma'am is so supportive. Thanks a lot for being here, ma'am. Thank you.
I study with Maya IELTS classroom because it's informative and lively sessions.
I study with my IELTS classroom because I like it.
Okay, so in terms of then planning your classes, think about the order that you present stuff, right? What type of questions do you want at the beginning? What do you want at the end? In essay writing, I mean, for speaking, Nick, what would you do? I guess I focus more on writing. Would you do part one first?
Definitely,
maybe?
Yeah. Part one. I'll start with part one.
And then work up to the more complex ones later.
Yeah, and I mean, the good thing about part one and part two is they're relatively simple compared to part three, but they but they still require very different skills.
True.
Yeah, and it's sort of speaking is intimidating for a lot of people. A lot of people don't feel confident, mm-hmm. and I think it's great to start with part one because the questions are so simple, really. And because, you know, there are no rules or limits for how long you should speak mm-hmm. or how much you should say. But it's just sort of about getting students to answer the question, build up the encouragement. If you feel they could say more, you ask them why, get them to explain it and then say, well, actually, you know, you can just tell me your answer and explain without me saying why. So, you know, just join those two things together and don't stop speaking.
Yeah,
and you'd give me a much better answer overall. And then, as we look at things on the course, like using things like it depends, like using contrast clauses. We do look at a lot of vocabulary in part one as well. And then by the time we've done part one and part two, we get to part three. They have those foundational skills of answering the question and justifying their answer. And then we introduce the more complex things like, well, now you can't really talk about yourself. If you want to get a high score here, you've got to make it more general.
I mean, that's the thing. I think speaking's one of the really good things about the integrated approach where you've got a topic is I do think that approach lends itself to speaking more, doesn't it? Right? Because you could do like the part one and the part three and they've got that vocabulary. But yeah, I think you're right. And I love what you said. It's about building confidence. Mm-hmm. So start with things that students may already be able to do and get them to do it well so they feel good about themselves before you move on to the next thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, great. So the other thing I would say then is, so think about what you're going to teach first in terms of the type of questions and the skills. Second thing is, how are you going to explain to the students how to tackle, particularly for listening and reading? I see so many teachers, you know, even a native teacher a couple of weeks ago in a group I'm a member of just said, oh, who teaches reading and listening, right? I just get the students to practice them at home. I nearly had a heart attack. I was like, there is so much that you can teach students for reading and listening, right? Yeah. So don't just give students things to do, right? If your lesson plan is students do the reading and then we check the answers.
It's not
what
enough.
It's not
what
enough.
Are you teaching?
You're not teaching them anything. Exactly, right? So think about, you know, the type of question. Even for reading, there are loads of interactive activities you could do in a classroom, definitely. Right? If you're mm-hmm. teaching headings, you could get students to write their own headings for each paragraph, right? Mm-hmm. And then compare them to the box. One of my favorites is, you know, you can cut the reading up and you get the students to try and put the paragraphs into the right order. That will teach them about, you know,
the function of different paragraphs, isn't it? Like how it moves yes. through the argument or the article.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think that. It will teach them about transitioning and referencing, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. these problems, what are the problems in the previous paragraph? Mm-hmm. There are lots of things you can do to engage your students.
Yeah.
And in a classroom in particular, you want people talking and interacting with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Nick and I, you know, what we're doing now for me isn't really teaching because we are just talk. Whereas in a classroom, I always think the most successful lessons where I talk the absolute minimum.
Yep.
And it's the students who are doing things and the students who are creating the language, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you were going to teach something like coherence and cohesion, which is looks pretty dry and pretty boring,
mm-hmm.
how could you make that interactive? Well, you know, things I've done in the past are we write class essays. I love this one, right? So everybody starts with a piece of paper and they write the first sentence of the introduction to an essay,
mm-hmm.
and then they pass it to the left.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next student has to read, okay, how did they start? And then they write the next sentence, mm-hmm. right? And then you pass it to the left. And then by the time it's gone all the way round, you should have an essay. If they've read it and everything flows,
mm-hmm.
you should have essays which progress and are well joined. And if they don't, you can then start a discussion. Well, what happened here? What's the problem? Okay, yeah. this sentence doesn't match this one.
Mm-hmm.
Simpler activities, right? You can, just like you could cut up a reading, you could cut up a paragraph.
Yeah.
Put the sentences into the right order.
Mm-hmm.
Remove the joining words and the referencing. Get the students to put them back,
mm-hmm.
right? Write essays with sentences with, you know, each paragraph has got one sentence that's off topic or irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Find can them they and get rid of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can they cross it out? There's so much you can do beyond just telling your students, do this.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I would say as you're planning, think about what, you know, the books you're going to use,
mm-hmm.
the materials, make sure you've covered everything. Think about how you're going to teach the skills and make it interactive.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the only other thing then, Nick, is feedback, right? How important do you think feedback is for the students?
I think it's critical, isn't it, really? They need to know what they're doing right and doing wrong. And they need to see their own progress as well, because that can be one of the most difficult things when you're learning a mm-hmm. foreign language, that you actually don't feel like you're making any progress and you can't really see it yourself. It's hard to judge, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just, it is, you know, providing correction, positive feedback and you know, assuring students that what they're doing is they're on the right path. I remember one of my private students that I'm teaching here, he's going for an 8.
Brilliant.
And when he took the test again and didn't get the score that he needed mm-hmm. for the third time, and we just had a discussion for about 20 minutes about how far he's actually come since he first took the IELTS test, and he saw actually in his essays that he's written and in his like knowledge of vocabulary and the fact that he's having 2 lessons a week and keeps, you know, doing speaking practice, doing writing practice, just having discussions mm-hmm. with me about things, that actually this is really helping him to keep improving, because he doesn't speak English outside of our classes at all.
Wow.
So
that's tough to get an 8 if you're not in that environment.
It is. So it's just, you know, it is kind of this positive reinforcement and stuff like that. And
definitely. I mean, I think the beauty of what we get to do is that we work quite personally with students, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, we can, like we've said before, we can spend 40 minutes, an hour on one essay, giving really deep feedback. If mm-hmm. you're teaching a group of students,
mm-hmm.
it's unlikely that you're going to be able to do that, you know, realistically, right? If you've got 8 students in a class, you may just have 10 minutes per student, right, to mark, mm-hmm. maybe even 5 minutes. So I would say, you know, particularly for writing,
mm-hmm.
make sure that you use the band descriptors when you're given feedback. Yeah. Don't just write good or tick. No, students.
The classic I've seen one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Students need to know, you know, well, what was the task response like, you know, and maybe just, I don't know, write one I mean, I used to always do smiley face, sad face, which is how we've based our marking. But I would write, you know, one good thing for task response, mm-hmm. one thing to work on for next time.
Yep.
One good thing for coherence adhesion, one negative. Give your students one particular thing to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can do that for the next essay, give them another thing. And by the end of the course, they should have ironed out those errors. But again, start from the big things first.
Mm-hmm.
If your student's completely off topic, don't start talking to them about, you know, I don't know, like lack of progression. It doesn't matter if there's a lack of progression if they're talking about...
Yeah, yeah. It's not important.
Mm-hmm. It's not important. So start with the big things first and then work down.
One thing actually that I found was quite good, I was doing an IELTS course a month or two ago with a group of six people. And what I did when I was checking essays, because I didn't have time to check everybody's in detail.
No.
I got everybody to send me their essay, and obviously not everybody did, but I took one, remove the name, and then we went through it together in the class. So that person who sent it to me gets their personal feedback.
Right.
But everybody else can also see. Yeah, and if you rotate every week,
mm-hmm.
then people do get a bit more personal feedback.
Yeah.
And everybody can see the mistakes of others and think, oh, I'm making that mistake as well.
One of the things I thought was always really valuable was when I was in a group class, I would, at the start of the lesson, I would go through the communal mistakes that people made, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd be like, okay, you know, write this on the board. What was the problem here? Good. Mm-hmm. That's the great thing about being in a group. Students can learn from each other, can't they?
Definitely.
Particularly if you've got people from the same language.
Yes.
Because they're likely mm-hmm. to make the same mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also, you know, same for a speaking activity. You may not be able to give all of the students in the class feedback. You know, hopefully you're walking around the classroom, you're correcting,
mm-hmm.
but equally you can stand there, you can be making notes, and as they finish, you could go through error correction, you know, the 10 errors, write the same. Sometimes I used to write them on the board and then give the students a couple of minutes. Okay, mm-hmm. can you find the mistakes?
Mm-hmm.
The key thing is, though, you have to, like Nick said, without feedback, the student feels lost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So definitely you want to be doing that. And then, you know, on the same topic as feedback,
mm-hmm.
for me, you know, when you're starting IELTS, you may not yourself have a good idea of exactly, you know, what is a 6, what is a 7, what is a 7.5. But as you start teaching and your students start getting their scores, that is great feedback for you of like, okay, I don't know, John, he got a 7 overall. Now I know that's what is needed or what's expected to get that type of score, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, in particular, I worked with a lovely student recently from Kazakhstan who's a teacher. And, you know, if you look at her Instagram page, she worked with a lot of students. They were all getting 7.58s for listening, speaking and reading,
mm-hmm.
but getting 6s for writing. Well, that's an indication for you as a teacher that something you're doing in class is not right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So use your student scores. Keep in touch with your students. Make sure they're feeding you the scores.
Yeah.
So you can then review what you're teaching in class, because you may not realize it, but you may be not covering the listening correctly or the reading or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the clearest and best way to get feedback on your teaching.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I'm not saying, as Nick said, like, I'm not saying that if all your students get a 6, it makes you a bad teacher. All of your students may be upper intermediate, right? Mm-hmm. That's a good score.
Mm-hmm.
I always said as a teacher, I can't be responsible for student scores. All I can be responsible for is giving the best teaching possible.
Mm-hmm.
What they do in the exam room, you know, some students just have a bad day, don't they?
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I do think looking at your student scores will give you just a, particularly at the beginning, just a good idea of where you are and how you're getting on.
Mm-hmm.
Any other advice you'd like to give anyone who's thinking about teaching?
Just be ready and be prepared, because it's not as easy as it looks from the outside.
No. And get help.
It's incredibly rewarding.
Yeah, it really is.
As I said at the beginning, I saw this as an easy ticket, and mm-hmm. it's become my career now, because I mm-hmm. enjoy it so much.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it is a difficult job, and it can be stressful at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it is really disappointing if your students don't get the scores that, as being an IELTS teacher, if your students don't get the scores that mm-hmm. they need, because you feel like you could have done something better. So you're constantly trying to improve and trying to make it easier and better for your students.
Definitely. I think that's maybe the thing that I would say is that I think as an arts teacher, you've got to have very broad shoulders because mm-hmm. you've got a lot of, you've essentially got people's lives.
Futures.
And futures yeah. sitting on your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to be able to take that responsibility and guide wisely and mm-hmm. with your best intention. So mm-hmm. sometimes that means telling a student, I'm sorry, you're not probably not going to make it, yeah. to being honest.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that what can protect you and what can, you know, if your student doesn't get the right score, what can protect you is knowing that what you taught was right.
Mm-hmm.
You believe in it. You know it works. Many other students have passed and that, you know, not every student can pass all the time.
True.
But if they don't, it's not because of anything. What you taught did no harm,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like what the doctors, that medical oath they take, right? Mm-hmm. Like they take an oath.
Do
and
no
I think
harm.
That's really, yeah, to do no harm. And I think that's really important, you know, and if you're not really prepared and you don't know what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be very difficult for you, you know, if a student doesn't pass. But when you feel confident,
yeah.
that can actually be your sort of armor, really.
Mm. That's true.
Yeah. So I hope that was helpful. I know that we have a lot of teachers listening. Yeah. Personal development, professional development never stops.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've never stopped learning. Every week, this week I've learned a lot about headings for a podcast episode that we're going to do in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Thank you very much. So, Nick, I think that's it. So, next week we will be back talking about paraphrasing.
Paraphrasing.
Yeah?
Mm,
it's a good one. Okay. I'll see everyone next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. My IELTS Classroom podcast is a production of My IELTS Classroom Limited. Nick and I do not represent IELTS, and everything you heard in this episode is our own personal opinion. You can find the show notes and transcript for this episode on our blog. That's blog.myieltsclassroom.com. And if you're looking for our video courses, speaking lessons, and marking service, you can find that at www.myieltsclassroom.com. If you have a question or query or just want to chat, you can email Nick and I at hello@myieltsclassroom.com. Our theme music is by Heartbeat and our artwork is produced by David Brown. Have a great week, study hard, and remember, this is my IELTS classroom. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.